Buddhist Summer School, Thursday afternoon, 30th August 1984. Venerable sirs and venerable lady, let me start with a sentence which Krishnamurti uses when he ends his series of lectures. This is the last talk. I am here, you are here, we are here. And that's not all. All the world is here. Whether we know it or not, whether we acknowledge it or not, we are completely interrelated with all the members of the human race. Even more, with the whole of the animal world, the plant world, the very earth itself, the whole cosmos, in fact. So, in a sense, the entire universe is present where we are, because we are conscious beings. And the extraordinary thing about consciousness is just this: what you or I am clearly conscious of, that affects all mankind and the whole of the consciousness of the world. This is why it is so important to see truly, to see quite clearly, so that we are completely conscious of what we see. Because it is this which is the power for transformation, the power which leads to fruition and fulfillment, to perfection, if we may use that word, perfection. I say if we may use that word, perfection, because perfection isn't something static. Perfection moves along with our perfection. It is not something stationary. It is not a final goal. Our whole universe is characterized above all things by constant change. If that change is progressive, then there is no end to development, to progress, as we call it, in the real sense. If we introduce finality into our life or any sort of activity, then there is fossilization. There is no progress, no development. Nothing worthwhile which we can call living. It is static, it is dead, in that sense. So it is important that we do see this clearly and be as completely conscious as we can of whatsoever happens here. First of all, my very grateful thanks to all of you who come here. I learn a great deal from all of you. Perhaps you don't know it, but that is the fact. I learn constantly, without any spoken word, without any exchange of thought or feeling or anything. But your presence teaches me. Because you come with love, not merely for me, but you come with love for the truth, for the Buddha Dhamma. And this makes for a divine atmosphere. And if one is sensitive, and to the extent that I personally am sensitive to that atmosphere, I learn from you, learn in the very real sense of learning. And for this, of course, I am extremely grateful. And to that I must add specially the inspiration that is present here through the graciousness with which the members of the Sangha come to these talks. For me, their presence is a very real inspiration. You may wonder if I'm just speaking in order to be pleasant to the members of the Sangha. Because, you may say, I write out my talks. I spend months, this time from the end of April right up till the beginning of the summer school, in preparing the talks. In that case, how can the presence of the members of the Sangha be a source of inspiration? In a strange way, they are. Because that which happens in terms of perfection, of beauty, of truth, happens in the context of the eternal, of which the brain as such is not conscious. The brain doesn't know it. But one's innermost consciousness does feel that inspiration. In eternity, there was no yesterday. There is no today. And there will not be any tomorrow. So you see, as and when that sensitivity in any individual ordinary everyday consciousness touches that sense of eternity, it anticipates that which is to come in time. You may remember how I said that in the Zarathustrian teaching, when there was a pause in the repetition of the creative word, meaning thereby, when there is a pause at any time in constant creative activity, evil steps in. And with that evil there is time, because time is responsible for sorrow. Time is responsible for death, for fear, for anxiety and such things. We must never think in terms of the conquest of time or death or anxiety or any such thing. I, as an ordinary mortal, and if I may say so, a very ordinary mortal, there is nothing that I can conquer. Nothing whatsoever. The word conquer and its meaning emerges only out of the consciousness which has never been touched by a lightning flash of the eternal. What are we going to conquer? You can't throw anything out of the cosmos. It's quite impossible. The totality is here, now. And if we awake to it, we will be sensitive to that extraordinary phenomenon of inspiration which anticipates the event. So I am very grateful indeed for it. Thus, this word divinity or the divine It's derived from the Latin deus, the Greek theos. You know, deus, the root of the word deus is div, which means, in the first instance, to give. How, you see how in all the monotheistic religions, God is the supreme giver of all good things, etc. God is the supreme giver. We like to say of all good things. But all that we would call bad things are also given by God the giver. And the supreme gift of God is death. Why? If there were no death, there'd be no change, either for the better or the worse. All change that takes place in life and in the universal process, all growth that takes place, is due to the fact that the present dies into the new. This is perhaps one of the supreme meanings of rebirth. Apart from that, the pettifogging idea of life after life is just childish nonsense. Forgive me, but that is how I see it. I may be quite wrong, I don't know. But this is how I see it. So death is necessary. When each one of us was a fetus, we had to die out of that condition in order to be born in this world. Every single second of our existence, we are dying into the next second in time, not realizing that time is completely subsumed in eternity. As and when we realize that, there is the complete fulfillment of the purpose of our existence as human beings. And as and when we can do that, our whole life becomes truly human. Man, the dictionary will tell you, means to think. That is a hopeless meaning for man. Man really, from which mind is derived, man really means to create. You will find a marvelous hint in the Trismegistic writings. The thought in the mind of God was the Logos, the word which created. The thought in the mind of God. What sort of a mind has God? Not like mine. I have no mind whatsoever in any case. I have a psyche which manifests mental processes. Now, what is my thought? Just continuous, inaudible chatter. That's all that thought is. It is inaudible chatter. Does my inaudible chatter create anything at all? But the thought in the divine mind, the creative word, created the universe. We shall have to re-represent the essence of these old teachings in a new form. It is necessary for us to do so. So, thought is not of special importance. But the thought in the mind of God meant that creative consciousness, that essential knowingness of the primordial creative energy which creates a universe which embodies law, order, justice, truth. So you see, the word Deus is related to that. And it is that which is the giver. The giver of all good things, which includes death. Therefore, includes development, change, growth, and so on. Those of you who have looked into this book, The Heart of Religion, may remember the last few pages where I say a few things about death. The other word, theos. Oh yes. Now, Deus, div, if you reverse the letters in the English language, it doesn't apply in Sanskrit, if you reverse the letters in the English language, you'll get V-I-D, vid, which as a Sanskrit word means to see, to be completely conscious of, enlightened. So, the Deus aspect of the divine is the enlightened aspect. It means light, divine light, eternal light. Now take the word theos as a Greek word. It's the Greek word. And theos is associated, I don't know so much about it unfortunately because I did only 6 months of Greek at school. Theos is associated with passion. Not our wild, subhuman and inhuman passions, nothing to do with that. But passion in the true sense. That warm something which is a creative urge all the time. And your true theologian is one in whom there is inward love, the passion, shining with transcendent light. That's the real theologian. And a theologian's business is not to spin out a conceptual verbal philosophy of religion and religious living. What is religion? It comes from re ligare. Servius, Lactantius, and St. Augustine derived it from re ligare. Cicero derived it from re legere, which means to bring together, to bring into a harmony. As for instance in Christian teaching, my sheep, I come to collect my sheep, so to say, you see. But re legare means to bind back, to take back. To what? To the primordial source. Now there are all sorts of difficult questions involved in this. If the whole business is a question of merely going back to the source, as we say, you see, then what is the purpose of it all? What is the point of it all? That is not the way to look at it. We think that there is movement, there is change, there is progress, regress, pleasure, pain, all the dualities, the multiplicities, and so forth. But in a sense, there is nothing, no thing. There is this extraordinary absolute isness which defies all description, totally defies all description. Even I can't describe it. That's it. Have a good laugh. You see? There is that to it. So, it is not a case of having a point, some point or some limited purpose. We have purpose simply because in terms of duality and multiplicity, in terms of separateness and isolativeness, there is a relationship of this to that, and that to this, and so on, scattered throughout. That enables what we call purpose to come into being. Otherwise, there is no purpose. Perhaps one of the most charming ways in which this question was dealt with in the Hindu writings, I forget for the moment which one exactly, perhaps you might tell me. The purpose of the universe is just that God has some fun. The Creator has some fun. At our expense. So you see, an extremely good reason for ourselves becoming fully human. The blissful Creator. I didn't tell you earlier the meaning of Hu. Hu and Su are interchangeable. Anybody with the name Su? It means blissful. The blissful Creator is the real human being. When he stops being the blissful Creator, evil creeps in. So now, divinity has an extraordinary, profound meaning, hasn't it? And that is our heritage as well as our divine potential, embodied in us. Hidden in us. It is our task, if you like, to let it out. You can't go pursuing it, and for heaven's sake, don't attempt to attain it or achieve it. That attainment and achievement belong to the realm of death, not to the realm of life. Life happens. And you see how beautiful it is? Watch a bud becoming a flower. It's absolutely a marvelous sight. You know, if you look at some of these, what's that particular plant? I've forgotten. I have watched it and seen a bud do that and blossom out in perfect beauty, perfect order. Perfect loveliness in the supreme sense. That is what we have to do. We have to be like buds which blossom out. The plant world can teach us very much more than the human world, I think, often. So now, religare, we go back to that source. We become the source itself. And therein is fulfillment, there is purpose. If you want to talk monotheistically, don't ask, why did God? There were two Scotsmen talking with each other. And they were discussing all the deep things. And one man said, why did God? And the other shouted out, God knows, be quiet. So, let us not ask the wrong questions, futile questions. You see, we read ourselves and our way of life into the transcendent. As I said the other day, all the God conceptions in every single religion are merely projections of ourselves in apotheosis. That's all. Petty little gods. So religion has that meaning which, because of which we have so to live that we naturally and sweetly and happily flower out into what the evolutionary process is trying to make us do. Now, renovation has to be a keynote for the present age. The renovation of the world, of the whole world. You know the world condition only too well. The misuse of nuclear energy, the misuse of so many sources of power, overpopulation, pollution. So people get frightened and say, oh, what shall we do about it? And they go about moving frantically, doing this, doing the other, joining this society, that society, forming great groups, having marvelous plans and so forth, all of which are utterly useless. Strange thing to say. I'm not suggesting for a moment that we do nothing. What I'm suggesting is that we do everything necessary. Everything that is necessary. Nothing that is not necessary. If we are quite convinced that it is good to join this movement and work for it and so forth, please do it. Go ahead with it. Be happy doing it. But you won't be happy if you are wanting the results that you preconceive. That is the sure way to fail. Remember the Buddha's teaching about hankering after this, that and the other, and therefore only obtaining a state in which you are utterly dejected. Don't preconceive the results. We wish the world to be otherwise. All right, the wish in itself can be pure. But if we preconceive the world and we want the world to be thus and thus and thus, we are only serving our own stupid pleasure drive. This is how I would like it. Well, nature says, my dear boy, you are a fool. And that is what I have discovered. I have been a fool. I still am a fool. But, God willing, forgive the theistic phrase, I will become the pure fool before I die. And remember, it was the pure fool, Parsifal, who was able to win back the grail. It's a very, very instructive teaching there. The pure fool, and how was he purified? Through great suffering. He went through immense suffering and thereby got purified. But he remained the fool in the sense that his psyche was empty of all sorts of ideas, beliefs, convictions, and all the rest of it. So that empty psyche was enabled the light of transcendence to shine through him. Now we have to become pure fools. Those of you who can obtain a copy of the poems of that Indian poet Harindranath Chattopadhyay should read the introductory poem. I'm sorry I forgot to bring the book. I could have read out that poem to you. I am a fool, it is entitled, you see, and it's a marvelous little poem. And he says things like this, that when you look into the fool's eyes, you see the lamps of wisdom. Things, thoughts of that sort, you see. So, do what you really want to do. Having examined beforehand whether it is the best possible thing you can do for the moment, and be happy doing it. If you are not happy, put it aside. It is not for you. You are not for it. You see, otherwise, what happens is that a person studies Buddhism or listens to Krishnamurti or does this, that and that, and I know actual cases where this has happened, then they give up everything. Give up their chances of a university career, as I know very definitely in one case, and so on. And the result is that they regret afterwards, unnecessary remorse. They do not meditate at the right time. You know how the Buddha said, monks, meditate. Do not be remorseful afterwards. And so on. See, you must enter into activities which you really care to do. Which you really care to do. Because if you don't, the repression will hinder your real development, your development in insight and into the nature of right activity for you. I told you the other day that you are absolutely unique. Every one of us is absolutely unique. And we have to express, to find out, to release that uniqueness into our daily life of thought and feeling, word and action. When you live happily, truly happily, not the idea which some people have of going to the pub and having 10/8, not that sort of happiness, but the real happiness. When you live really happily, you become good. I'm not going to define the word good here. But goodness and happiness are inseparable companions, just as truth and beauty are inseparable companions. Isn't it an extraordinary thing that the scriptures of the world, or at least some of them, are written in most beautiful poetic language? They're sheer poetry. Look at the Psalms, look at the Rig Veda. Look at things like that. Truth and beauty go together. Because beauty essentially is truth. Why? Didn't Keats say, truth is beauty, beauty is truth, this is all you need to know. Beauty and truth always go together. Because beauty is law, order, justice, all these things. That is beauty. Plato gave out that when he talked about truth, goodness, beauty. Consider truth, goodness, beauty. He didn't add happiness to it. I like to add happiness to it. Because happiness is the perfect carrot for all humanity. We all seek happiness, but we don't know what happiness is. So do what you think is good and you will do right. Now, from that stage, we can move to the stage of the renovation of the world. I can never renovate the world. How shall I influence the world for its betterment? By renovating myself. That's the only way. When oneself is the light, there is enlightenment all around. When oneself is the Lord of wisdom, the Lord of compassion, of goodness, purity, then all the world feels the results of it, the effects of it. And that is the most powerful influence of all that any individual can exercise upon the totality. There is no other way. You see, I might think myself a very clever fellow and spin out a marvelous economic system. But wait a minute. Who is the spinner of the system? A person with imperfect insight, with imperfect intelligence, with imperfect skill and technique. And he spins out this marvelous system, and everybody jumps on the bandwagon, and there they go, make a marvelous mess, and then another fellow comes along and produces the next mess. Look at history. Look at, for instance, Frederick the Great of Prussia. He was a bestial character. He produced a wonderful army for conquest, for aggrandizement. But he was a beast of a man. And what has happened with some of the so-called philosophical teachings of Fichte and Hegel? Fichte propounded the ideas which led to the concept of the master race, the Herren folk. He was responsible for that. Mind you, he was an extraordinary man. So many things he said were just perfection, marvelous things, and yet he could do that sort of thing. And Hegel, in his philosophy, again a very marvelous philosophy, made the mistake of saying that the universal process is the unfolding of the divine mind, and this unfolding finds its best fulfillment and greatest fulfillment in the German race, in the German people. And he declared that the great ego should ruthlessly destroy everything that stands in the way of the fulfillment of his ideas and conceptions. Hitler naturally followed. That Hitler was the karma of Fichte and Hegel, if you like. So you see, our renovation has to start, and this is where religion comes in, relating back to that creative source, which is ceaselessly creative. And this needs purification, of course. And therefore, the sealers, the samadhi, the panya, and everything that the Buddha Dharma presents. Therefore, also, all that the great religions have taught in the way of purification, of morality, and understanding oneself, understanding the world. If you understand yourself, you understand the world. Because you are the world. Each one of us is the whole world. The world is not merely a collection of individuals. It is an integration of all the individuals of the world. And one individual in this integrated whole can heal other individuals. You know, it's like the human body. What is one of the most extraordinary characteristics of the living cell? The living cell is self-motivated, self-reproductive, and self-healing. You see, that is how we are made, physically. Mother was very clever, wasn't she? Mother Nature. Supremely clever. We must learn from Mother Nature. So, If we are pure and clean and beautiful and so forth, if we are completely renovated, then the renovation of the world will inevitably proceed apace. Then join your societies and this, that and the other, and do what you think fit, as the Buddha said. Well, I must end now. And again, thank you all very, very much indeed. I'm not a sentimental person. And I'm not going to say, I love you all. Each and every one of you. I won't say it, because in saying I love you, there are two separate things. When that separation has vanished, there is only love. So, let me wish you all a very happy and a fruitful and a spiritually prosperous year to come before you all meet again. And if this dog's body is healthy enough and alive, it will probably be here. Thank you all very much indeed. Thank you.